Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise and get straight to the insights that matter. In an age where AI seems to be, well, reshaping everything, it's really no surprise that search is undergoing a massive transformation. We're moving beyond just typing keywords and getting back a list of links. Today, we're diving deep into the hidden mechanics of how generative AI actually understands and answers your queries. Our mission for this deep dive is to explore the fascinating journey your simple search query takes, how it fans out, uncovers latent intent, and intelligently pulls together information from, well, tons of sources. Think of it as a shortcut, really, to understanding the cutting edge of AI-driven search. It gives you the playbook to truly win in this new landscape.
Yeah, what's truly different now is just how fundamentally it diverges from the search we all grew up with. We'll be pulling insights from the AI search manual to illustrate just how complex and, frankly, brilliant these new systems are. It completely redefines what information retrieval even means anymore.
So get ready to discover why your exact words aren't really the gravitational center of search now and what really happens behind the scenes when you hit that search button.
Okay, let's start by contrasting what we might call traditional search with this new generative search era. Historically, search worked quite differently, right? It was keyword first. You typed a phrase, and the engine primarily matched those exact words. Simple, linear. That's a huge shift, isn't it?
It truly is. I mean, what used to be a simple keyword match has evolved into this sophisticated interpretive dance by the system. Your initial query now, it acts more like a high-level prompt or, you know, a clue. The system doesn't just match. It decomposes your query, actively rewrites it, generates speculative follow-ups, and it routes these variants to different sources. The output isn't just a single ranked list anymore.
Right.
It's a synthesized answer pulled from a whole portfolio of content. That's a game changer. Let's use a concrete example. Say you search for best half marathon training plan for beginners. The old system, it just looks for those exact words. How does generative search take that one query and like transform it into this whole landscape of related ideas?
It's actually quite remarkable. That single query becomes a seed for just a vast tree of explorations. The system automatically considers related stuff like training plans by time frame, gear checklists, injury prevention strategies, nutrition plans, maybe pacing strategies. Essentially, it's trying to figure out the full scope of your underlying need, not just the literal words you happen to type. It's anticipating what else you might need.
Right, what you really want to achieve.
Yeah.
So how does it begin to do that? Our sources break down this query expansion process into a few key steps. The first one is intent classification.
Yeah, this is the system's first shot at figuring out the true nature of your request. For best half marathon training plan for beginners, it pretty quickly identifies it as informational. It knows it's in the sports and fitness domain, specifically running. It sees the task requires a plan or guide, maybe with some comparison. And it even factors in a low risk profile, you know, prioritizing safety like injury prevention, this classification. It's incredibly important. It sets the boundaries for everything that follows, guiding the types of sources and content formats it'll even look at.
Okay, next up we have slot identification. What exactly are these slots here?
Think of slots as variables the system expects to fill.
Yeah.
Some are explicit, right? Like half marathon for distance or beginners for the audience. But a lot of them are implicit. Things like the ideal training time frame, your current fitness level, age group, or even your goal. Are you just trying to finish or hit a PR? Knowing these potential slots exist allows the system to actively search for content that can fill them, even if you didn't explicitly mention them.
It's fascinating that it infers those implicit slots. Does this mean content creators now have to kind of play detective, anticipating every unspoken user need? Or do we risk missing out if we don't explicitly address things like age group or fitness level in our content?
You've hit on a crucial point there. It's not just about anticipating. It's about covering that full spectrum. This proactive slot identification is why the next step, latent intent projection, sounds a bit sci-fi, but it's essentially the system embedding your original query into this high-dimensional vector space. Imagine every idea in the world as a point in a huge invisible city. The closer two points are, the more related their concepts are in the system's mind.
So it's mapping my query to a neighborhood of related concepts.
Precisely. So half marathon training might automatically bring up 16-week beginner training schedule or run-walk method, maybe how to avoid shin splints. These aren't random connections. They're informed by past user searches and, importantly, knowledge graph connections. For instance, the knowledge graph might link half marathon to 13.1 miles, training plans by distance, and nutrition for endurance events, expanding the search with those related things. It's almost like it's anticipating your next five questions before you even type them, like asking for a screwdriver and getting the whole toolbox.
Huh, that's a great analogy. So beyond just understanding intent, the system actively generates new ways to look for information, these rewrites and diversifications, and speculative sub-questions.
That's right. It's like the system's thinking ahead, asking itself, okay, what else might this user need or want to know? Rewrites might include things like 12-week half marathon plan for beginners over 40 or printable beginner half marathon schedule, just maximizing the chance of finding useful bits of content. And speculative sub-questions are predictions, often based on past user behavior. What shoes are best for half marathon training? Or how many miles should I run each week? By generating these preemptively, the system gathers material it thinks it'll need for a really comprehensive answer. It's getting ready.
Okay, given all this, what are the practical implications for, you know, the people creating content? It sounds like just matching exact keywords isn't going to cut it anymore, not even close.
Yeah, this brings us to a really key consideration. If you only produce content for the exact query someone typed, you're basically competing for just one tiny branch of this whole expanding search tree. To become a regular part of these generative answers, you really need to be present in many branches. That means building what we might call intent complete hubs, content that covers not just the core question, but also these common, valuable expansions the system is likely to generate. You need to start thinking about your topics in terms of slot coverage, making sure all those variables the model might want to fill are clearly represented somewhere in your content.
Right. Once the system has this richer portfolio of subqueries, the next stage is subquery routing and fan-out mapping. It's no longer just what to look for, but where to look.
Precisely. Traditional search, you know, it just sent every query to the big web index. Now, each subquery becomes like a mini task, and the system actively decides which specific source or sources can best satisfy it, and importantly, which modality is most appropriate for the answer. It's an internal intelligence that's constantly learning which sources are most authoritative, up-to-date, and crucially, extractable for specific kinds of subqueries.
Let's go back to our half marathon example. A subquery, like 16-week beginner half marathon training plan, might get routed to coaching blogs. Mm. But half marathon gear checklists could go to e-commerce sites. Mm. And stretch routine for runners might even prioritize video libraries. It's not just about the source type, but also modalities as retrieval targets, right?
Absolutely. That's the mapping subqueries to sources in action. It's that internal logic matching query types to preferred source types and formats. A plan often maps to long-form text or maybe structured schedules, a checklist, probably listicles or product comparison tables. A routine often points towards video, maybe with transcripts. And yes, modalities are crucial. The system might decide a stretch routine is best shown with video, but it will often prefer to start with transcripts because they're just faster to parse. Your content's modality, is it text, a table, video, an image? That becomes part of the retrieval specification. If your amazing video lacks a transcript, or if a data-heavy table is stuck in some unparsable PDF,
It might just get skipped,
exactly. The system looks for the most efficient and reliable path to the information.
And efficiency also sounds like it connects directly to retrieval strategies and cost budgeting.
It certainly does. Some subqueries are best served by, say, sparse retrieval, like BM25 for finding specific terms. Think of BM25 like an old school librarian meticulously finding books with your exact keywords. Others benefit from dense retrieval, using embeddings for semantic similarity that's more like a librarian who understands the meaning and guides you to conceptually similar stuff, even if the words are different. Often, hybrid strategies combine both, and, you know, every call to an API, a vector database, a crawler, it costs resources, compute time, money. So high-priority subqueries might get multiple passes, maybe hit several sources, lower-priority ones, they might just get a single pass from the most likely source. This is really relevant in commercial contexts. Think about our finance example. Best high-yield savings account for 2025. That would rate queries to financial APIs, minimum deposit info to bank product pages, and maybe insurance explanations to government sites, each with its own cost profile.
Okay, so what's the big takeaway here for optimizing content in this new world?
Well, the critical challenge, I think, is that if your content doesn't match the modality the system expects for a given subquery, it might never even be retrieved, no matter how good it is. This is precisely why multimodal parity matters so much now. If you publish a training plan, Ideally, it exists as narrative text and a structured table and maybe a downloadable file and a short video with a transcript. The more your content aligns with the system's likely routing profile, the better your chances of being retrieved across multiple branches of that fanout. It's about being present wherever the system looks in the format it wants.
Okay. We've expanded the query, we've routed it to different sources and modalities, and now the system has gathered a whole bunch of potential content. The next step is selection for synthesis. This sounds like where it really narrows things down, funneling everything into a small usable stack of selected chunks.
That's spot on. And this is vastly different from classic web ranking where, you know, the goal is position one. Here, dozens, maybe hundreds of content candidates might be relevant at some level, but only a handful are going to be both useful and truly usable for generating that final coherent answer. The system is ranking these little atomic units of information based on how suitable they are for being lifted out, recombined, and integrated without introducing errors or, you know, hallucinations.
The first filter sounds very practical. Extractability.
It really is the first major gate. If a chunk of information can't be clean pulled out from its context without losing its meaning, it's just less valuable to the synthesis process. A training schedule that's in a nice, well-labeled table, immediately usable. That same schedule buried deep inside a long narrative paragraph forces the model to parse it, reconstruct it.
Increasing the risk of error.
Exactly. Significantly increasing the error risk. Clear headings, list tags, semantic markup. These things are key. They make your content extractable.
And the system looks at evidence density and signal-to-noise ratio. What's that about?
It's basically measuring the proportion of meaningful, verifiable information compared to the total word count in a chunk. So a concise paragraph that gives a specific recommendation, progression details, maybe cites a credible source, like, most beginners should train 3 to 4 days per week, according to the American College of Sports Medicine. That's high density. A long, rambling, anecdote-heavy story where the actual facts are scattered all over the place. That has low density, it's noisy, and it's much more likely to be dropped. You know, skip grandma's life story, just give me the bulleted recipe.
Right. And what about scope, clarity, and applicability? This seems crucial for avoiding bad or misleading information.
Oh, absolutely vital. A point to remember is that these generative systems are incredibly sensitive to context. Statements like, this plan assumes you can currently run 3 miles without stopping. That's extremely useful because it defines the scope, the applicability. Without that context, the model risks recommending content to someone it's totally unsuitable for, which can be a real safety issue, especially in well.
YMYL topics. Your money or your life?
Exactly, especially in YMYL domains. For example, a finance chunk really needs to specify the date or the account type it applies to. Something like, as of February 2025, Marcus by Goldman Sachs has no minimum deposit for its high-yield savings account, is much preferred over some vague, undated, general statement. Clarity is key.
Makes sense. What about authority and corroboration? Does the system actually evaluate source credibility?
It absolutely does, and it's getting better at it. The system weighs the credibility of the source. Is it a certified coach for a training plan or a registered dietitian for nutrition advice? Corroboration is also subtle but really important. If, say, 3 independent, credible sources all agree on a specific mileage progression for beginners, that piece of information is much more likely to survive the selection process. Outlier claims. They need exceptionally strong sourcing or they'll probably just get filtered out.
And naturally, freshness and stability. For dynamic topics, this must be critical.
Oh, definitely. Recency is crucial, particularly for topics that change often. A chunk of content that is clearly dated and ideally shows evidence of recent review or update is far more attractive to the system. In finance, for instance, where interest rates can change monthly, outdated chunks get discarded very quickly. They're just not relevant, or worse, misleading.
And finally, harm and safety filters are a really crucial check to make sure the advice being pulled is safe and responsible.
Yeah, these filters are often domain-specific and can be quite sophisticated. For a training plan, it might filter out advice like, say, increasing your long-run mileage by more than 10% per week. That could be genuinely unsafe for a beginner. In finance, it would work to filter out speculative advice, legally dubious claims, or misleading information that could seriously harm a user's financial well-being.
It's almost frustrating, though, to think that even really high-quality content could get excluded at this stage. Why would that happen if the information itself is actually good?
You've highlighted a common misconception, and it's an important one. What's fascinating here is that, say, a beautifully designed interactive chart. It might contain a wealth of great information, but it could be totally invisible if its underlying data isn't exposed in a way that's crawlable and parsable by the system. Or think about long-form content that, you know, buries the key facts deep down the page after a long introduction. It risks being skipped simply because the model finds denser, easier-to-use material earlier in its retrieval set. The format and presentation are becoming just as important as the raw quality of the information for it to actually be selected and then synthesized into an answer.
So the clear implication for content creators is you have to optimize at the chump level.
Precisely. And this isn't just like a best practice anymore. It's becoming almost an existential requirement for visibility. Imagine re-engineering your entire content pipeline so that every key paragraph, every data point is like a self-contained, verifiable, perfectly formatted little answer chip. Each piece of information needs to be clearly scoped, high in evidence density, presented in an easy-to-extract format think tables, short paragraphs with clear headings authored or reviewed by credible experts, and dated for freshness. This readiness, this modularity, is what determines whether your work actually makes it into the final answer the user sees.
Okay, let's bring it all together. Let's trace our best half-marathon training plan for beginner's example through this whole journey again, quickly. From that initial query to its expansion with latent intents, like gear and injury prevention, then routing those subqueries to specific sources and modalities, maybe video for stretches, structured data for the mileage plan. Then comes selection, where those well-structured tables survive, but maybe the dense, rambling narratives get filtered out. And finally, synthesis, where a coherent, useful answer is built from those carefully curated, selected chunks.
Right. And the key thing to understand strategically is that your content could potentially be represented in multiple places within that final synthesized answer. If you only have the basic training plan, okay, you might get cited once. But if you also have the gear checklist, the injury prevention tips, the nutrition guide, the stretch routine, and crucially, they're all in preferred extractable formats, you could potentially be represented, cited maybe 4 or 5 times within the same comprehensive answer. You become an indispensable source for that user's need.
So strategically, what does this all mean for anyone creating content today? What are the big shifts we need to internalize?
Well, I think the shift to generative search really changes the game in 4 critical ways. First, intent coverage replaces keyword coverage. Forget just keywords. You need to build comprehensive topic hubs and slot complete content that addresses the many possible expansion and related facets of a query. Second, multimodal parity becomes table stakes. Your core information needs to be available in multiple formats, text, tables, images, videos with transcripts, maybe structured data to maximize the entry points into that retrieval process. Third, chunk level relevance engineering is now just as important, maybe more so than traditional page level optimization. You have to design each individual unit of information to be extractable, dense, clearly scoped, authoritative, and fresh. Think modular. And finally, fourth, new measurement needs to evolve. Traditional SEO metrics like rankings and click-through rate, they're not enough anymore. They don't tell the whole story. You need to start figuring out how to measure things like subquery recall, atomic coverage, how many chunks are you winning, evidence density, and citation stability within these generated answers.
Wow. It's not just a strategic shift then. It sounds more like an operational earthquake. It probably demands entirely new tool sets, maybe even different team structures.
It absolutely is. You know, forget content is king. Maybe now it's content structured as perfectly cut data bricks is king, something like that. The winners in this new era will be the sites that start thinking like data providers just as much as they think like publishers, designing content specifically for integration into answers, not just for standalone consumption on a web page. The systems will keep getting better, smarter, faster. And your job as a creator is to make sure your content perfectly fits the slot the model is trying to fill at every single step of this complex journey.
What a deep dive. It's crystal clear that generative search is far more complex and frankly more intelligent than just matching keywords. It's this dynamic multi-stage filtering process where your content is essentially competing or auditioning at dozens of points along the way. So the question for you listening is, what new opportunities open up when you stop optimizing just for a static keyword and start designing for this dynamic multimodal answer pipeline? How can you position yourself to become the indispensable source at every stage, not just, you know, another option in a list? Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the future of search. We really hope this helps you navigate and truly win in this rapidly evolving information landscape.